Hi, I'm Alan. I'm an alcoholic and drug addict. I'd just like to thank Chris and for allowing me to come out and participate in my recovery. It always, you know, it's humbling to, you know, be invited out and share with somebody that the worst that's happened to me. And, you know, it's just amazing to me that God can take everything that's happened to me and then, you know, channel it to show somebody else that it's possible and that thing. And I really got to give a shout out to old Peyton. He went through the program and then he got out. And I know Peyton from the belly of the whale, you know, went in some dark spots. And then he found his way through and he came through this program and he's working the deal and he's doing the deal now. And he said, man, yeah, it is. It really is. All right. Yeah. If you need some evidence it works, there's Peyton against the wall over on the right. All right. I knew Peyton in some dark times. So anyway, man, I'm Alan. I'm an alcoholic, drug addict, and I'm you know, I had to hold off until I was 11 for my first drink, and I probably needed to drink long before that. You know, I was always irritable, restless, and discontent. And I come from a home like I'm sure a lot of people in this room. My mom was married four times before I was 18. There was a lot of boyfriends in between the husbands, and every single one of them were alcoholic, and my mom didn't drink a drop. She found met all of her husbands at the bar, and they were, you know, it just baffles me to this day where how she could marry these dudes and never drink, and she met them all at bars. So, anyway, what she was doing down there is beyond me. But she was that good time chick, and she wanted to go down there and find her husband. She'd drag a dude home, and there he'd sit on the couch for 5 or 8 years or something like that, you know, drinking his. There he is. What's going on? Number two, number three. You know, that kind of thing. But there was a lot of bad shit that went on, man. There was a lot of abuse. A lot of sexual abuse happened in our household. It was one of them things. My sister and I had to grow up really fast. And we got a little brother. He was 10 years apart from me. My sister's older. And my sister was experimenting with drugs and alcohol at an early age, just like I was. And she really got into the hard stuff. And she was 4 years older than me. And it was 1985, and crack cocaine took my neighborhood by storm. It wasn't even a joke. It was everybody I looked up to coming back from the Vietnam War, these dudes that had these badass stories, and they were, you know, just, man, they were strict and disciplinarian kind of dudes, you know, and here they were strung out on that pipe, you know, and Richard Pryor burned himself up at the time, and it was kind of a mystique and, you know, mysterious. And it was called the rich man's high if you were on coke, and it was really, really expensive. It was like 100, 125 a gram, and you really had to have your shit together if you were doing some coke, you know. And, man, I was 13 years old, 1985. My sister was 17, and she was already pretty much on it, and I took my first blast of that pipe. And it was free base back then, and, you know, you were puffing the glass dick, whatever, you know what I'm saying? And it was just a rough little old thing. And, man, I really, really loved everything about it, the high I got from it, the romantic, you know, all the rituals that went into it. And, I got strung out. By the time I was 16 years old, I was a full-blown cocaine addict, and I was robbing, stealing, busting checks, doing anything I could to support my habit. I was a blackout drunk from an early on. I don't know anything about casual drinking with your pinky out. You know, I don't know anything about all that right there. For us, it was hard hammer, party till you puke, you know what I mean, that kind of thing. And then when you get that cocaine involved, and our entire neighborhood was like that. I don't know anybody that drank like this. You know what I'm saying? And I had my first blackout drunk when I was 15. When you grow up in an alcoholic home with a codependent mother, when you turn 15, they throw you a keg party. Everybody knows that, right? You know, then you're 15. Fuck, it wasn't even 16. I felt like that was a marker, you know what I mean? Anyway, I'm 15, man. The last thing I remember is I was thrown up off the side of the porch, and the dude next door was yelling, "Ralph, Ralph," you know, and I was like, oh, God. But, man, I lived in a small town in Wichita, Kansas, and you could throw a rock and hit my grandmother's house. She lived directly across the street. My uncle lived directly next to her. You could walk one block down and up a block. My great-grandparents lived there, and I was born in the house next to them. So that's where I was at. You know what I'm saying? And sometime in the middle of the night, I walked across the street and I pounded on my grandma's door, and she opened, and she was a strict, mean. Her name was Sally, and I didn't jack with her. I was afraid she was going to take me or, you know, make me come live with her. They were always threatening that bullshit, you know, so I was like, I ain't doing none of that. I can do anything I want over here. I'm not going over there. Well, here I am at 2 o'clock in the morning, drunker than fucking Cooter Brown, knocking on her door saying, I'm lost. I don't know where I'm at. I need a place to stay. And she was like, fuck, I don't even what I said. Dude, I was in a complete blackout. I wake up the next morning, I open my eyes, and I take a big old, and it's my grandma's house. And everybody knows what their grandma house smells like. Like fucking mothballs or some, you know. I was like, holy shit, you know, and so I get up and I walk out, and there's my grandma. She's with her, with my Aunt Elsie. They've already powwowed it up what they're going to do to me the next morning, you know, and they come firing at me. What were you on last night other than alcohol? Fuck. I don't even know, man. I just parted them, and I just burned off, and she had called my mom that night and asked my mom if she knew where her son was at. She goes, yeah, I think he's upstairs asleep. He's in my bed. He showed up at 2 in the morning. You know, I don't know what the hell I said. I still don't know what I said. All I know is I ended up at my grandmother's house. I don't know how I got there. And that wouldn't be the last time that my grandma would say that to my poor mom. And, you know, I'm kind of going to fast forward this. I'm used to telling my story in an hour. I know I've got about 40 minutes, so I'm going to cut out some chunks, man. But I was strung out on cocaine, and I was robbing, stealing. I had some Grand Theft Auto, some... I mean, I was strung out hard on the cocaine that year of 15, and I caught a lot of severe cases, felony cases, and they sent me away. They locked me up. I was locked up from the time I was 16, 17, and I got out 6 months before I was 18 in a place called YCAT, Youth Center at Topeka. And it was where they sent all the really rough kids, the ones that shot up the school. This is back when they were first shooting up schools. I knew a dude that shot up his school. I was locked up with him and a couple guys that killed their parents. And, you know, I was like, Jesus. All I did was, you know, was strung out a little bit on that pipe, you know, and here I am tripping. But I could really, I was a chameleon. I know I learned early on how to put on a mask that somebody else would accept. I could get in there, and I thrive in a structured environment. Man, give me the rules and show me where it's at, and I could, you know, I can just do it. I don't know where that comes from. And anyway, so I made it through that thing, and I got out, and I swore I'd never use again. I'd learned my lesson, and I went on. I got a chick pregnant, and I had a kid, and I was in there playing house, and you know, and I wasn't treating my alcoholism or my drug addiction, because I went to my first, I had my first exposure to Alcoholics Anonymous inside that treatment or inside that youth center. They'd sent us off to AA. And I, you know, so, but the last thing I was going to do is say that I was alcoholic, especially at that age. And I got out, and I, you know, I was got with that girl, and we had a kid, and we just started playing house. And man, I was 19, she was 17 when she was late. I was like, late for what? She was late. We were having a kid, you know, and I just thought, well, if I just went to work and worked 50 hours a week, third shift at a grocery store, and provided enough money for my family, because everybody was like, you're going to starve to death. You can't do it. You know, the whole world's going to come down. You should get an abortion. And she didn't want to do any of that. Man, we weren't doing that. We're going to have this kid, so come hell or high water, we weren't going to starve to death. I was that kind of dude. I was just going to make it, you know what I'm saying? And so anyway, we're playing house, and then she packs her shit up, takes her and the kid, and they move back in with her mom. And my sister, my mom was marrying her last husband, and she was, my sister's still strung out to this day, but she was living down there in my mom's house, and my mom was marrying her her fourth husband out in Hayesville, Kansas, but my great-grandmother's house is where we were living at the time. My sister was staying there, so I went to live back at that house. They were down there shooting meth, smoking crack. Just it was a shit show, and I was heartbroken. You know, the sun rose and set on that chick and that kid, and I got right into that environment. It wasn't long before I was going to show them, and I had like this little pity party thing. Well, fuck it, I'll show them, and I'll just do a bunch of drugs. And man, I got strung out again hard, and I spent the next probably, you know, 19, I was 19, you know, we stayed together for that first 2 years, but I was probably 21 right then when I got back on it. 21, 2, 3, man, I was out there hard. I was, you know, and I did the same old thing to support my habit. I was busting checks, stealing tailgates. I was, you know, I was just racking up legal issues after issue, and I got every program you can possibly have. I would stand up in front of that judge, and I had a good gift to gab, and I'd say, Your Honor, I would really like this opportunity. Meanwhile, I'm just you know, hammered down on the pipe, you know, if I left to my own devices out in the thing. But they locked me up for a month later. I look pretty decent. You know, I can get up there and tell them what they want to hear. So they gave me every acronym you can possibly have. The SCARP program, the TARP, the LARP, the BARP, you know, all the bullshit, you know, trying to save this poor dude. You know, they really just needed to lock my ass up and, you know, teach me a lesson. But, man, I'll tell you how bad it got, man. I went into this last program. This is it, man. I'm facing like a 5-20 in the state of Kansas. I'm going. And it's no joke. State of Texas, I've been there. But this state of Kansas ain't no punk. And so I'm not digging that. I'm not going to Hutchinson. All right, little homegirl going happen over there. I just want to explain to you just how severe my drug addiction is, man. Consequences will not keep you sober. I don't give a damn what you're facing right now. They maybe gave you a little old break, and now you're in a 30-day little old spot here trying to do a diversion, and you got every intention in the world to steer that thing back on the path, get a job, get my shit back together, all that horse shit. I'm telling you, without working a program and staying close and getting near the fire at the meetings and shit, you get picked off. And I'm just living proof. I'm not passing no judgments. I'm just telling you what happened to me. And, man, I'm facing a 5-20. They give me this little low intensive halfway house setting, and I'm in there under felonies. And I do 3 months in there, and then I got to do like an 18-month intensive outpatient, you know, parole thing here. And I dodge the bullet. I'm not going to do that 5-20. They're going to give me a diversion, and I'm going to be all right, and I'm going to get on down through there. So I go in there, and all the while I get a job down at the meat processing plant because old Slim works at the meat processing plant, and I'm setting my relapse up the whole time. I've got every intention. Looking back on it, I know that I set myself up. So I go to work at the meat processing plant so I can stand there with Slim, and we can scrape meat off of bones and fuck around. But anyway, I get to the end of that program. Slim lives at an apartment complex. He hooks me up with the landlord. I'm getting my apartment. He's got the apartment upstairs. I check into that apartment. I paid the deposit, the first month rent. I got my own spot. Got an old donated couch and a chair in there. You know, I'm going to play house in that joint. And I'm over there, and it's Friday night. All I've got to do is spend Friday, Saturday, Sunday, check back into the program, piss in a cup. I'm out. I beat him. I go up to old Slim's house, just checking. He's up there with a couple of chicks. I'm looking around. Oh, God, I feel that little tummy kind of, oh, God, dang, what's going on here? Slim, there's some smoke in the air. And I tell myself, which is going to be an ongoing occurrence in my story every single time I start, I swear that this time it's going to be different. And I'm just going to do 50. I'm just going to do 50 of crack. You show me a dude that can just do, or a chick, anybody, you just do a 50 of crack. That's all I'm going to do. Just a 50. Just once. I'm just going to take one blast. That's it. I'm just going to taste it. You know, whatever. So I stay high all weekend long, man. And Monday morning, I am in the closet. Peeking out that time. I'm sweating like a dog. My case manager is out front, and he's banging on the door out there. His name's Mr. Enoch. He's a great dude. I never forget this dude's name. I forget everybody's name, but I remember old Mr. Enoch. This dude is at the front door, and I'm in this closet, and I'm looking out, and he's like, da-da-da-da, Mr. Diop, where you at, Mr. Diop? And I'm like, I'm a hit, and I can't even do it. So, dude, I go on the run from these people. There I am. I don't know how I got myself into this thing. It only was going to be just 50. And I said I could just be 3 days. If I smoked it on a Friday, I could be clean by a Monday. The fuck am I thinking? Who thinks like that? You, every one of us in this fucking room. We fucking, you know what I mean? How are we going to... I swear to God, if you get out of here and you hear your mind say, I'll just do 50. This time it's going to... I'd run for a meeting. Grab a police officer or something, you know, and tell him, look, I'm thinking about just doing 50. Just lock me up now. Fuck, save me the grief. Say, take my money, you know, get it out of my possession, you know. So anyway, man, I go on the run. They pick me up. Of course, they pick me up in about a month. I go back in front of the judge, and there's old Mr. Enoch. Mr. Enoch is in the courtroom with me, and he's in there going, I don't know what happened to Mr. DeHoff. Mr. DeHoff was a fine, outstanding client, best client ever. Because I do well in a structured environment, man. There's dope all over that. I'm not even going to go jack with that. I know better. I don't know where it is left to my own devices. If I'm not getting high and I'm not in recovery, I'm in a most wicked spot, living in this head with this committee that's going to tell me that this time it's going to be different. This time I'm going to be able to do something different. It's the greatest fucking lie that we've ever, that we have to deal with in our head is that committee. Mr. Enoch sitting in that courtroom, he's telling him, I would really like to have Mr. DeHoff back, another crack at old Mr. DeHoff. And so they convinced me to take, if I sign for an aggravated escape from custody, like I, pow, hit somebody in the head, shimmy down a fire escape or some bullshit, rammed an aggravated escape from custody because I was under there a felony. Well, that's what I picture aggravated escape. You know, I don't know, but it didn't look like what I did where I left, went, and never came back. But anyway, because I'm there on a felony, they give an ag escape. That'll later, I'm telling you that for a reason. Later on, it's rough. So they he goes, what do you think, Mr. Hoffman? I would really like the opportunity, sir, to probably not have this. He buys it. So I sold the car, you know, whatever. So anyway, I get back in the program, and this time I finish the whole thing. I move out. I don't know what apartment I get after that. I'm rolling. I'm a professional painter. I'm rolling a couple of years, 2.5 years, painting houses, doing the damn thing, not really going to meetings, pissing in a cup weekly down there at the parole office because it's an intensive 18-month program. I'm pissing in a cup. I'm doing the damn thing. And I'm not working a program or anything. And then I don't know what it is. Any of your normie friends or family out there, they're never going to change. Don't expect them to change. Don't expect them to understand where the hell you're coming from in that sick, twisted mind of yours because they'll tell you stuff like, oh, you can just have a glass of wine. You can just have a beer. You know, the beer wasn't really what got you. You know, it was the crack. It was the crack that took you out. You know, it was a freebase. You know? And if you're not in recovery, listening to guys fighting a good fight, man, or talking to a sponsor, having some dudes around you that are fighting the good fight, all the stars will be in line. Everything will be perfect. It'll be the perfect night, the perfect chick, whatever the case may be. And you'll go, you're right. You're absolutely right. It wasn't the alcohol at all. It always started with alcohol, but I don't even remember that. You know, in the part in that book where it says, we can't even remember the agony of just a few weeks or 2 weeks before. That shit baffles me, man. Like, I'm like, whoa, I don't even know. I can't even recall the agony of what just happened to me. So I start drinking again. Man, this time, bro, if I started drinking right now, I'm convinced. I've been sobered over 12 years now. I could start drinking today. I think I'm going to be high. I could be high in 3 months. You just almost set the clock to it. And so I know that about myself now, but it took a lot of trial and error to get to this point in my life. And so I start drinking. I start, doing my own thing, just living my own life, and it ain't long, and I'm hitting that pipe again, and I've got the Wizinator, I got a little, remember that little boy I had? Here I did, I took hostages along the way, chicks that I'd get into it with them, and I loved them right out of the gate. I love you too. Yeah. We're gonna live happily ever after. I don't know where that is. I'd start dating a chick, and it, like right into there, like a month or two in, because, man, I just would latch onto her, and we'd be living together right out of the gate, and I'd be dropping the L-bomb on her, and all of a sudden, we're just a happy couple, and I don't know how to get out until I just burn it to the ground. I mean, I know that's happened to everybody. I don't know how to get out of that thing. I can't. I don't have any healthy relationships in life. I don't know how to do all that. All I know how to do is just do this thing. I don't even know what I'm doing. I'm just doing life, right? And anyway, as long as I don't get high, it'll be all right. So anyway, I start getting high again, man, and it gets dark, and it gets dark really fast. If you ever are doubting yourself that you can, that you don't believe him, because at that time I was sober for a couple of years right there, dry drunk or whatever. I was dry crack or whatever for a couple of years, you know. And I picked up right where I left off. It was instantly right where I left off and a little bit lower, and I just kept sinking, and I sunk quick. And, man, I'm driving a 1978 Chevrolet pickup, yellow, with a white stripe. You guys know that truck. Got the white stripe that runs down the middle, and it's got a topper on the back so I can lock all my paint and equipment up. So it's very inconspicuous. But anyway, I go on a, I go on a five-day bender. It's rough. I'm out of money. I start robbing stores. I rob five convenience stores. Yeah, it starts to get real now, right? I'm robbing my shit has escalated. Now I'm robbing to support my habit, and I rob five stores, and then I'm driving by the Bank of Commerce. I look over at this bank, and I go, I just turn in that bitch. I walk in there and give them a note and rob the bank. I literally went in and robbed the bank, and it's 3 miles from Sally's front door. Yeah, I roll out with your money, jump in the truck, roll out. There's some good dope on the left side of town. I just hook that way. I'm gonna go that way because I want to get to that next blast, man. I'd do anything to just not have to feel and not have to face what I was going through, and just get high that one more time. It was dark. It was desperate. I don't know how I got myself back in there, but bro, it gets real and it gets real quick. And I don't want to ever go back there, man. And I didn't that time. And I meant it with everything I in my being. And they said I wasn't going to go back. And I did. And I'll go in there and I rob that bank, man. I'm driving in my getaway car. And the cops see me from like 2 miles away. There he is. We got him. So they pull me. They block the damn street off, man. And they pull out shotguns. And they lay me out flat. You know, it's that whole dig it out. Back, walk backwards and shit. Helicopter spinning around at top of me. Movie, Fox News shows up, sets up the tripod. They're all fucking out there. And my mom, my grandma sees that shit on TV. She calls my mom and says, "You know where your son's at? I think he's painting houses. He's doing really good right now. He's on the news. He done robbed the Commerce Bank over on McCormick." My mom's like, "Holy shit." Another proud moment for my mother. I always just wanted to be a guy my mom could be proud of, but this was not that day. They fucking lock my ass up, man. And, you know, my boss, bless his heart, he wanted to bond me out. I said, "Dude, don't even bother trying to bond me out, man. I just start my time, dude. I want all my county jail time. I know I'm going to go. I've already looked at the guidelines. I'm facing 57 to 71 months. I go in front of that judge. I swear to God, he's almost dead. He's like one of them, judges that looks up at you like that, just looks down, read. He's got to be this close to read the stuff. He's like 80 years old. He's in the feds, you know. And he tells me, he says, "Mr. Dioff, I really want to upper depart from the sentencing guidelines. The only way they can do that is an extensive criminal past, which I have." Dude, on paper, I look like the worst criminal, like Jack the Ripper on steroids or something. Not chopping heads off or anything crazy, but this long list of everything. They agree to give me, to throw myself at the mercy of the court. If I sign for the bank robbery, they'll drop all five stores, give me a plea of guilty, and they'll go. They're going to ask for the high end of the guidelines, the 71 months. This judge wants to upper depart from the sentencing guidelines and give me 10 years. He decides somehow, God, I'm telling you, works in my life, even through the hard times. He gives me the 71 months. He said, "I'm going to go ahead and go with the prosecuting. They said 71. I'm going to go ahead and do that. And hopefully, Mr. Dioff, this is it for you." So I go into, man, I'll tell you, the first time I ever flown in an airplane, I was shackled up. I'm from Wichita, Kansas. We're poor. My mom's raising three kids and a couple alcoholics on one income. And so I'm shackled to my feet, and I get on this big-ass plane. I'm on Conair. I'm flying out for the feds, and they're landing in Memphis and then picking some dudes up. And then they land in Oklahoma City, and they got their own little old thing. They pull up, taxi up, boom. Then you go in like cattle. They unshackle you, and then you go and you talk to the psychiatrist and then the doctor, and then you get checked in like that. They check you all out to dental, all that, give you your outfit, give you your number, give you everything, you know, and then you get shot to your prison. And they sent me, swear to God, because of my aggravated escape from custody was the big glaring one on the thing that shot my points up to a high. It was just under the USP level, But they shot my points up to an FCI high. I show up this place. It's the Alcatraz of the Rockies. If anybody doesn't know what that is, it's that place with the Supermax in there they sent Gotti to. It's built into the mountain. And then they got the USP. Then they got the FCI high. And then they got a camp that I'll never see because I aggravated, you know, escape from custody. You know, I'll never get down there. I won't get it low. I won't get anywhere near there. And I'm just about, if I do anything, I'm going to the USP. But, That place was a rock and roll spot. I showed up. There's three fences. The last fence, you cannot climb it. It's unclimbable because the motherfuckers are putting in there. They want to keep them inside there. It's unclimbable. It's like, you know, a master guy with whatever couldn't climb it. I'm not getting out. So I'm in there for 71 months with good time. I'm going to do 63 months. I lived through the crack riots. They tore that. I hate it. I try to keep cuss words out because the kids, I know the kids are present. Anyway, they tear that place up, man. They're life fighting people out of there. They're tearing that place up, man. It's scary as all get out. I lived through two riots, that one, and then they had this one. I was left work one time, man. It's like low-lying clouds, like right out of a movie, man. It was all foggy, and these dudes were like, I passed these guys, man, and there was like a big old group of Mexican dudes, and then there's like these big group of black dudes. It was the Crips against the Norteños or something like that. And I'm like, Jesus. And I'm looking around, man, it gets scary quick. Is it quiet in there? You need to get somewhere because it's getting bad quick. And man, I just watched these dudes just, it looked like something right out of a movie. I heard this dude say, andale, andale. And then I heard this other guy say, well, let's do this, fool. Let's do this. And man, it was like crazy, man. I mean, I get the chills just thinking about that deal, man. It was scary. I was just walking backwards, freaking out. I'm in a structured environment. I do what I'm supposed to. I go to work, gym, come home, do my thing. And so I go through that deal, but it's a scary environment. It's like wearing a heavy coat for 63 months of my life. They open the door 5 minutes before the hour, and they shut it 5 minutes. So you've got 10-minute move. Attention on the compound. The compound's now open for a 10-minute move. Compound's not open for a 10-minute move. I heard that for 63 solid months. I say all of that. I dress this thing up. Not to impress you, not to give you some drunkalogue and war story. I just want to tell you just how sick I am. You would think, after doing all of that, 63 months in, I go out. I'm doing 3 months at the halfway house. I'm out. I'm rolling. I'm digging swimming pools with my uncle. I'm chilling. I'm out, I'm free, you know, I'm not working a program. My one of my relatives said, you could just have a cocktail. What? A cocktail? You could just have a cocktail. It was the crack that did you in. It was the hard, you know. It wasn't that liquid. You know what I mean? You can have a cocktail, so there I am. Pinky out. You know? Having a cocktail, little Jack and Coke, rum and Coke, something like that and Coke. And there I am, starting on that thing 3 or 4 months later. I'm on the pipe, running from the feds, freaking out. Right before I get on that, man, it gets cold in the winter in Kansas. I go down to a car lot, man. And you know that putting a mask on that everybody will accept? Well, it makes a great chameleon, so I could sell things really pretty good, you know. And so I started, I went up there and I said, hey, I'll be the lot attendant or I'll sell. They said, what makes you think you can sell? And I said, everybody said I'd make a great salesman. So they said, you start on Monday. Man, I was salesman of the year. I mean, before I twisted off for the first, January to the end, about 10 months, I did auto sales at a Toyota dealership, and, man, I was really, really good. I was salesman of the year. I set a record 7th month into the business. I did 40 cars in a month. They could never even see it. I'm first guy there, last guy. Hell, I just came out of 6 years of prison. You know what I mean? I'm hungry. There ain't nothing going on. And they changed my life. I was making $18,000 a year. Now I'm making $13,000 a month. My plaques are on the walls. They're patting me on the back. I made it out. My mom was poor. We came from nothing, man. I'm making $150,000, $175,000 a year. And that thing happens, you know. I just have a cocktail, and now I'm rich enough. I'm making enough money to support. You know, really, I kind of overthought that thing, you know. That committee in my head is just sick, bro. It's sick. And it tells me that if I just had enough money, that maybe I could afford to get high, man. And I mean, I'm making $13,000 a month. I'm not putting up. One month I made 21 G's in a month. Come on, I can do a little blow. It's a rich man's high. I'm rich, you know. So That thing happens. I have a couple of rums and cokes, man, and I'm heading home, and that I'll just do 50 hits me. Like, where the fuck did that come from? I'll just do 50. Man, I'm real on this motorcycle. I got a crotch rocket. Man, I'm doing big thing. I'm rolling home. Man, I pull in there. I grab a 50. Man, I'm off and running. I'm running from the feds. I'm shaving my head, man. I'm doing all kind of crazy shit to try to hide my identity, you know. I mean, I'm making $175 a year. All I got to do is stop, bro. I can't stop. My boss is beating my phone up. I'm the salesman of the year. They want me. They're like, what are you doing? What's going on? You never not answer your phone. And I'm trapped. I can't stop, man. I just can't stop. I'm sick. I don't want to even answer the phone. I shut that thing. You know, all the voicemails. It already got to the 30 voicemails, so it's just going to nothing. They stop calling. I'm on the run. They go, oh, man, we lost him. We lost him. It's done. So I get picked up, man. And, you know, a lot of times God is looking out for the dudes when you can't look out for yourself. Man, I walk out of this house, and this dude draws down on my Allen, and I turn. And it's me. He's a marshal. He gets me down, and he shakes me down. He says, is there anything I can put? I got needles, because at this point, my drug addiction, I'm shooting meth and shooting coke and smoking it and the whole nine yards. And he pulls all this stuff out. He puts it in a Ziploc bag and crushes that stuff. I've got tubes with coke all in it. I've got pipes on me. I've got needles on me. He crunches that stuff up and throws it in the trash. And that's important, because in the feds, you get out with a three-year tail. If as long as you don't do any new criminal conduct, you get back out with, you go back for 1 year. So I got to go back to the walk of shame and see everybody on cell block, whatever, you know, all them dudes that when I was leaving going, bye, bitches, I'm out. Shit back in there, you know me, and I'm back here. I'm you know, show me where my bunk is, you know, give me a job over in facilities, give me my hot, three hots and a cot. Just man, I was making $175 a year. I was selling mother money. I was driving big whips, motorcycles, doing everything I wanted to do, seasoning the food the way I wanted to season it, you know what I mean, doing things, man. And so I went back for a year. I got back out. I went back in the car business, and I moved to Texas. And I was still doing well in the business. I went out here to run MacHike, Ford Lincoln Mercury in Georgetown. They made me the new car sales manager of the Chrysler Dodge Jeep store. I'm literally, man, I feel like I got everything I ever wanted, but I'm not going to meetings, and I'm not working the steps. And I moved to Texas, so I did the geographical change. I'm making more money than I've ever made in my life. I say all that not to brag. I'm just telling you that if you think that you can just go out there and make a ton of money and then you're not going to be the same dude, it's the committee in your head lying to you. And the geographical change, if you think you can just fly off to California, New York or something, wherever you go, there you are, looking right back at the mirror. I'll just do 50. We'll just... What the fuck? Or I'll just have a cocktail. It's just, it's unbelievable that we can't recall the last thing. Man, I got a cornerstone in my recovery. I'm in Austin now. I'm doing really well in the car business. I twist off. I go back to my boss. And I had like this epiphany, man. I was like high like for like a month and a half. And I still haven't lost everything yet. And I look over and I said, man, I got to get my life together. Like for some reason, I'm not craving anything or I'm nothing. I'm like, what the? I doing? And I look over at this Shelly, the chick I'm dating at the time, a hostage, and she says, I say, we're done. I'm going to get my life back. We got to get my life, because, man, I got a $400,000 house out in Steiner Ranch, a boat, bikes. I'm doing a damn thing. I'm a manager of over $24 million worth of inventory, and I got this epiphany. Man, go get your shit together. I look over Shelly, and I said, we're done. That's it. She went, what the fuck is wrong with her jaw? Huh? She was scared. She didn't want to stop, man. You know what I mean? She was like, okay, all right. Yeah, let's go ahead and wrap this joint up. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, y'all been there. Yeah, y'all, you ones laughing. Y'all been there. Yeah. Poor thing, you know? And you know, I go back in, man, and I go back to my boss, and I say, listen, buy this little old paid-off car I got. I need the money to get in treatment. Give me another chance, boss. I'm going to get this shit together. I'm going to go to Starlight Recovery. My insurance will cover everything but $2,500, so I need some money. I said, if you buy this car for $8,500, I can catch my bills up, give them $2,500 out in Starlight Recovery. And I'm going to tell you something right now. Starlight Recovery requires you to do a four-step and a fifth-step before you get up out of there. And it's a cornerstone of my life. I swear to God, I went out there for 30 days. I did my first four-step, and it changed my life. Finally, I can get a little bit emotional, and I hate getting emotional in front of people. But did that four-step, and I could finally feel some relief from that crap that was going on in my life. Man, what is all that? And I did my fifth with this dude that would never tell anybody. He was like some cat from wherever. I still don't know who he was. Anyway, I do a fifth, six, seven. I'm making my list of amends. I go back and make a few. I'm out. I get out of that sumbitch, and I'm high on AA, and I'm fucking hitting meetings, and I'm pink clouding it, and man, I'm like a spokesperson for AA now. I'm like, man, I'm selling AA because I'm, you know, pretty good salesman, but now I'm selling on AA, and I mean it. And man, every time I'd said I'd never going to use again, I meant it to my core. I could have passed a lie detector test when I meant it. I go back in the car business. I'm working long hours. I'm still with Shell. Shell made it through treatment. Yeah. Oh, Shell hung out. Yeah. Yeah, they laughed on. You know, we love each other. We're lovers. She loved my life, right? I don't even know how to love myself, let alone love Shelly. She says one day, I swear to God, if you're in this relationship, if you don't surround yourself with people that are supportive, that know your situation, that want you in recovery, man, just find another support system. Because Shell says, I mean, you just worked long hours. You don't have to go to that AA meeting tonight. And I looked at her, I said, you know what? I don't have to go today. I'm good. And that got real easy, real quick, because that shit's out doing push-ups in the parking lot waiting on you to get up out of there. You know what I'm saying? And there I go, and I stopped going to meetings. I just stopped going to meetings, and there I am in the backyard with the speech pathologist and the attorney that live next door, because I'm somebody living up there in that fucking bullshit up in Steiner Ranch, you know what I mean, making big money. And that thing happens, and they're in the backyard with Merlot. And they say, you can just have a ring of Merlot. It was the crack that did you. And all the stars lined up, man. And I said, you know what? Even after 6 years, went back in the penitentiary, consequences won't keep you sober. I'm not going to meetings. I'm not working a program. And I'm in a wicked spot. All the stars are in line. And I take a drink of that wine. Man, 3 months later, me and Shell. And we're in a $400,000 house in Steiner Ranch. And we're like this. For 15 hours, we swear there ain't no cops down the street, man. Come on. I told her what I said, Shell, just lean up. Stand up. Can you stand up? I can't even stand up. Motherfucker. Oh, we were hurting, dog. We were hurting. It was a sad spot, man. It was sad. Man, we stood on up, man, and we sat down, and I was like, oh, my God, I just can't believe it. I haven't went to work in 2 or 3 months. Bills are piling up. Bank's trying to repo shit. I've got it backed up in the garage and shut down in there. Neighbors keep bounding on the door. We finally let them in, man. I'm shooting. I'm smoking. I'm doing. I mean, it is just an entire. I don't know how to stop, and I don't know how to get out of that thing, man. And you know how they say your disease wants to kill you? Well, at the end there, it was. And I started locking up in seizures, man. I'm driving a Lexus at Old Torfin 35. I locked up in a seizure. There was a lot of shit that happened in between that deal, but I just want to speed this thing up because it's like a 40-minute deal, and I usually take an hour, and then I just cheat a little bit and take an hour and 15 because we're all having fun doing the damn thing. And I lock up in a seizure over there in O'Torfin 35. That's my new Peyton. And I'm driving this Lexus, and I've got 3 ounces in the center console. I'm just selling dope to support my habit. That doesn't work either if you're hanging on thinking you can be a big dog. And don't get high on your own supply. They mean that bullshit. And anyway, I can't, you know. So I haven't paid that car payment ever. I lock up in a seizure. This dude's meeting me to buy an ounce. He gets the, because he's a great guy. He steals all the dope out of the center console, but he doesn't know that I've got 9 grams of powder in my pocket. I got 3.5 grams of heroin, and I get a little bit of speed in the ashtray. And I wake up on a stretcher, locked up, bleeding out of the mouth. You know, fuck. Freaked out, you know, and they pull all this shit out, and so I go back in front of the judge, and Your Honor, I'd really like the opportunity not to let how this reflect. He says, man, let me just give you a short prison. Said, no, sir, I'd like to really have this not to reflect on my record. So he gives me deferred adjudication. He says, if you come back in front of me, I'm giving you 20 years. Judge Baird, the fucking nicest judge in Travis County. I'm standing back in front of the man in 4 months. They let me out of the fucking thing. Now, I tried to make a go of it. I'm just like, oh, my God, I'm freaking out, man. So I go, I'm standing back in front of him, and he means it. He gives me 20 years. He gives me 16 years for the cocaine, 4 years for the heroin, ran concurrent. I'm going to do 16 years. I swear to God, it felt like he took three skips and just kicked me right in the nuts. I said, sir, I've done a lot of shit, but I ain't never done anything I deserve. 16 years? Are you serious? The state of Texas just breaking a brother off, you know? I'm like, what? 16 years? Man, I go through the whole theater. It's like, sign up. I'm not signing shit. Just show me this. Show me my cell, man. I go in there, man. And I mean, here I am on another bottom. Have I been through some bottoms? I mean, you would think anybody would be like anybody in their right mind. We suffer from some shit that only prayer. It only works. It's so wild. You can go in there and say, I got cancer. You need chemo. Give me everything you got. You know, we say you're drug addict, alcoholic, you know, prayer, meetings, you know, helping another guy in line. And we're just like, I made enough money. I don't need none of that bullshit. You know, like, here I am dying of my own fucking, you know, here I am down here dying. Man, I go to the state of Texas, man. And for 16 years, I go through there. That, you know, I prayed a prayer over in an abandoned apartment on the east side from coming from making $15,000 a month managing that car dealership, living in Steiner Ranch, to absolutely busted and broke. I had dope fiend my car. I'd pawned it. It was gone. And I said a prayer because I was so stinky and so funky, and I was in an abandoned apartment taking a shower. And I hit my knees and I said, God, please get me out of this situation because I'm out of answers. And I meant it, man. I meant it to my core. And I remember that day like it was yesterday because I'll never want to forget that day, because that was a day that it was, you know, a little over 12 years ago. And it was December about 16th or so. And then my sobriety date is December 22nd, 2007. And I got out of that. God delivered me from it. He answered that prayer. And it was to the tune of 16 years in the state of Texas. So, yeah, I felt like he overshot the mark fucking big time, okay? Big time he overshot the mark. But that's what he gave me. And, you know, I was going to go through that thing, man. And somewhere deep down inside, I knew I was going to be okay. Because I know how to do time. I can do time. I've been doing time since I was 16 years old. But I go in the state of Texas, man, and I landed at Wind Unit. They make me a dog boy. I'm literally laying tracks. I get a suit on and shit. I'm up in a tree, and I'm waiting on 10 85-pound dogs to circle the tree. And then I'm – funnest time of my life. I swear to God, I learned how to tend to horses and raise dogs. I raised 7 puppies from little guys, man, and they – and. It was just God's way of showing me. I didn't hate on the police in the penitentiary, man. God showed me that I seen dudes that were great dads that were coming down there to do a job and go home and raise their families. That's what I seen. I didn't see some dude that wanted me to keep me locked up. He was just doing his job, keeping me in that pen. And, man, they loved animals and loved dogs. But I've jumped down in that pit of 10 dogs and just fight like crazy. And then I just run, and then they just be tearing my up, pinching me on the ass and shit, just eating my ass up. And I got to ride horses, and we hunt hogs with dogs, and I was hanging around a bunch of East Texas boys and shit. It was the funnest time of my life. I was like, I was in a summer camp compared to the feds. Everybody said it was the opposite, you know, feds fed well and all that horse shit. And man, it was a flipping nightmare in that joint, and it wasn't so bad. I did 4 years, 3 months on a nonviolent low-level drug offense. I got out about 8 years ago, and man, I said, listen, they said if you the recidivism rate drastically decreases. They sent me to the SCARP, NARP, or whatever the fuck. What is it? Whatever it is in the state, they got another name for it. But I did 6 months in, 3 months ATC, Austin Transitional Center, got out of that. And then I did 9 months continuing care over their Headway Circle or whatever off 183. And I went through that whole program. They that was my first goal getting out. They said if you complete that program, the 18 months, the recidivism rate drastically decreases. I'm not stupid. I just wanted to fucking increase my odds. So I knew I had to make 18 months out, and I did. And I said, come hell or high water, I'm going to get me a sponsor. I'm going to get me a home group. I'm going to get me a job. I was the timer for like 2 years. You know, if you went over 3 minutes, cut it off, bud. Let's wrap it up. It ain't a speaker meeting. Let's roll. That was my job, and I took it serious. Just get all that bullshit. Yeah, all right. You got us all held hostage, man. It's time to go. Earl, let's roll, you know, and I went through like 5 or 6 months. I got a lot of trust issues with dudes, man. A lot of shit happened at my household, and it took me a while to be able to open up to a dude, to trust a guy, to tell a dude my personal shit. Man, are you crazy, man? I'm in the penitentiary, motherfucker. I ain't afraid. That type shit. I make money, man. I'm a salesman. I'm whatever it is, man. It's all big-ass front. Really, I'm running through life with 1,000 forms of fear. I'm scared, man. I'm scared, man. I'm just scared. I don't want to fight you. I'm scared to fight you. Fuck it. I'm cool. You know what I'm saying? But the truth of the matter, it was just real. Man, that just takes a lot of courage, man. If you can walk across that room and say, hey, man, will you be my sponsor, man? It says, all right, I'm going to guide you through the steps, man, and you can bury your soul in a four-step, man, and get some of that bullshit and weight up off you. And when you make a mistake, man, I make mistakes all the time. 12 years sober, man. I made some real mistakes while I was in prison. I'll change the way I feel no matter what it is. Cheating on my wife. I needed to nip that shit in the ass. Every chick I'd ever, I cheated on Shell. Pfft, you know, pissed at her because she cheated. And looking at her phone and all that. But, man, go look at my phone. My phone's, you know, whatever. But, you know, I think the greatest gift I got out of Alcoholics Anonymous is this ability to be honest. Honest in everything I did. I used to have, like, I don't know, 10 stories I could whip out in a room full of guys, man. And you whip one out, man, and they were like, oh, man, that was the hardest one. That was all the bullshit. I never did that bullshit. Anyway, I got rid of all 10 of them, and I don't tell anymore. Yeah. And when I make a mistake, if trying to change the way I feel, I quickly call my sponsor, man, and I tell on myself, man. I've done, you know, like, just things I wasn't so proud of, and I wrote them things down, and I'd write down lists of fears, man. I'd write everything, man. I'm afraid of nut cancer, lung cancer, brain cancer, fucking, I'm seeing motherfuckers die, shit. Man, I'm writing that shit down, real shit, man. I'm afraid she's gonna suck old boy up. I'm real with it, man. I'm real with it. I get raw with it, man. I'm going to put the real deal down there. I'm afraid she's doing everything I was doing back in the day because that's what I was. I'm a scumbag. I'm a liar and a cheat. I'm putting that stuff down because that's what I'm really afraid. I'm afraid she's doing the same thing she was doing. I was doing to them. Anyway, so I put that on and I share that with them with the fear inventory. And if I get into a resentment with the guy, I write that down. And I share it with my sponsor. I do 10, 5, 6, 7 now. 10, 5, 6, 7. 10, 5, 6, 7. And, man, I got to get real uncomfortable before I still call my sponsor. But at least I have an out. It used to be I could, you know, stick a pinky out and have like it's just a cocktail. You know, I'm not afforded that. I realize now that that shit wants to kill me, and it will, left to my own devices. So, you know, I call my sponsor, and this is a much better life than what I was living. I haven't gotten thirsty in 12 years. I haven't. You know, I had some opportunities to get high while I was in penitentiary. I didn't. But then when I got out, that's when the rubber hit the road. That's when I really needed to grind down and get this work in me. I encourage you, if you're new in sobriety like we all are doing, you know, 30 days treatment, get out. Get a home group. Get a sponsor. Read the book. Go to 99. Whatever. Think. All the bullshit that they tell you to do. You know, do it, man. Because what do you got to lose? Man, maybe it works. I got married I was dancing at the Broken Spoke, met this chick, and got married. Her name is not Shelly. didn't rekindle that love with Shell. But, you know, I met my wife, Alex, when I was 6.5 years sober. And, you know, when they say don't get into recovery, you know, the first year, it's true because you don't know how to love yourself, man. You can't love somebody else until you love yourself. And relationships are really, really tough, man. And I remember, man, I'm 6.5, 7 years, you know, I'm working the program and stuff. And it could work. Don't get me wrong, man. I mean, well, try your thing, man. Go on out there. I ain't trying to pass judgment on anybody. Don't get me wrong. But this is just what my experience. I was so afraid, man. I was so freaked. Fuck out, man. This chick is honest. She come from a good family. I married up, bro. My wife is the banker's daughter, and sometimes I don't feel like I'm worthy. I don't feel like I'm worth it. I'm a scumbag. I'm dragging. Man, whatever you had happen to you in the past is in the past. It's not a life sentence, man. It's just something that happened to you. It ain't got to consume you and own you. That's what I love that about AA. I never want to forget it, but it doesn't own me today, man. I don't just run around with a 3-time loser, alcoholic crack cocaine addict is what they used to say about me, man. 3-time loser, crack cocaine addict, alcoholic. I'm recovered. I'm in recovery. I'm a good dad. I got a job. I got I got a lot of other titles besides that, man. I've got two little kids at home. I've got a little girl named Pearl. She's 2.5 years old, and we just had a 2.5-month-old. His name's Austin. And, man, I'm telling you right now, I wanted another little girl because I love my daughter. I'm sorry I get emotional. I'm a crier. If you see me in a meeting out in the world, I probably will cry. So, anyway, I love Pearl. I wanted another girl because I'm so in love with Pearl. But God gave us a boy, and I'm starting to warm up to little buddy. He's all right. You know what I'm saying? I mean, man. But, man, my life, I'm living my best life, man. Just recently, I lost my job in December. I lost my job 5 days before Christmas, and we got a toddler, you got a newborn at home, and I knew how to go through that. At first, I was scared shitless, man. I was freaking the F out. I was tripping, man. I mean, I was, whoa, and, then I got to take a deep breath, call my sponsor, write down my fear, and what do you? I thought they were just repoing the cars and taking shit out of there. I hadn't used, you know what I'm saying? It wasn't that kind of party yet. So anyway, I wrote the inventory. Man, that was a big life change. I was afraid. That's the first big thing I had to go through in recovery. You know, like a 12-year sober, and I lost a job. Man, I've watched people. I've watched people lose their loved ones and people died on them and stuff like that through AA. But I get to watch these people go through these life-changing events, and they go through them with their head held high and leaning on the support system. And that's just what I did. And now I got a new job. I'm selling cars at Austin Infinity now. So there we go. Back in the car business. But I've come hell or high water, I'm going to make sure that my recovery is set first. I'm not working a ton of hours. I'm going to go to – oh, and I didn't mention that God sent me a therapist. My wife is a licensed therapist. He knew that I needed a therapist. She's an LCSW. So anyway, every now and then I'm sitting on the couch and I don't even know. She asks all these qualifying questions and I'm like bawling. Oh my God, here I am. I'm 8 years old. I don't know what that is. No presents on the tree. I don't know what that kind of bullshit. You know what I mean? Anyway, but man, I got a sponsor. I sponsor dudes. Look, young Kyle is in my sober house. My wife and I prayed on it and bought a sober house. When we bought a property, and I turned it into a sober house in South Austin. And, I get to, you know, participate in my recovery with that. And I get to come out here. And, man, I could be doing a ton of other things, man. I could be just, you know, kicking it at home with my kids or doing whatever. But if I don't stay close to the rooms and I don't continue to do this work, and sponsor guys and have a sponsor and know how to get out of situations like losing a job or something like that, one day it'll be pinky out fucking and I'll just do 50. And I just don't want that to happen again, man. Life's too good. I'm living my best life, and I encourage you, if you're new in recovery, to get a sponsor and get a home group. And that's all I got. Sorry I was rambling.